go ahead and call the meeting to order for the Wilmer Municipal Utilities Commission. Today is Monday, July 12th at 11:45 a.m. Please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, any changes to the agenda today? Now we'll move into the consent agenda, which consists of our meeting minutes from June 28th and bill payments in the amount of about $250,000. Mr. Heron, anything on bill payments to take a look at?
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. On page four, I'd like to point out our wind turbine lease. That's an annual lease, and typically I will point out some of the annual items on our accounts payable. So way on the bottom, we talk about independent school district. Our agreement with the school district, they invoice us twice a year. However, the school district invoices us mid-year for both the first half and second half. So that's what we have there. That's what our lease for the ground, the wind turbines, where they're constructed. School district owns that property, so that's why we have the lease there with them. Other than that, that would be the only item that I'd like to note as unusual in our list of bills. So thank you, Commissioner Matter.
Any questions?
I do have a question.
Mr. Johnson.
On page three, on the arbitration for Mario, can you just help me explain? I know we were in arbitration, but what is that for?
That is for the settlement of our water department agreements that we had going with our hiring process. So that process went through the entire process, all four steps. There's four steps in our union contract.
I follow.
And it went to arbitration. Arbitrator ruled in the utilities' favor here. So that has been settled now.
So if it was in our favor, why is this a payable? Who's Mario, I guess, is my question.
Mario is the arbitrator.
Oh,
arbitration
okay.
Costs are split 50-50.
Okay.
So that what is listed there is our half of the arbitrator's fee.
Okay. So. That doesn't come out of just 100% of the union?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I'd look for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
So move. Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Further discussion. All right, Ms. Mathiasen, roll call, please.
Commissioner Bamboo.
Aye.
DeBleek.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mattern.
Aye.
Weber.
Aye.
Thank you.
That passes. Thank you. Next up, we have approval of the Planning Committee minutes from July 1st. Commissioner DeBleek.
Thank you. Planning Committee met. First item we reviewed was the Northeast Water Treatment Plant. Corolla is about a 90% complete with that project right now. It's been an ongoing with this project for about the last 10 years. Overview of the 90% completion of the design for the project is completed, and we're looking to have it shovel ready and ready to put out bids within the next 6 to 7 months, I guess, early 2022. Costs with the project have been basically escalating ever since we started this design. Right now they're estimating $19 million for the construction and $2 million for the engineering and construction oversight. We have been looking at various grants and funding options through both state and federal grants, through Corolla and through our lobbyists we have on retainer in Washington. Hopefully something comes up before our construction bidding dates in 2020 in early 2022. It was also mentioned that our current water usage is nearing the city's capacity limits, and the increase in water usage is due to several factors, including the weather and the dry weather we've had recently, and it's affecting the residential and commercial services. So therefore this project needs to probably move forward on a timely basis right now, otherwise we'll have to look at additional restrictions on water usage throughout the community. And I guess following the considerable discussion, it was the consensus of the committee that we move forward with the water treatment project in the northeast well field. Item two, we had a pay equity recap. It was just a review of the pay equity process that has gone through, and that was just a discussion item. Item three was the had a 2020 employee survey results. We reviewed the results of the 2020 management employee engagement survey, and out of the positive outcomes to have been there, and we hopefully are increasing some of our employee morale with some of the things that we are doing with as a result of the survey. And so we'll say that management will continue to provide the team building atmosphere among staff and through various avenues. I think many of us participated with the Joe Schmidt Silent Impact and that video service they had. So, and the following group discussions. And so, the fourth item that was on our agenda that we discussed was the with the multi-unit dwellings that are in the community already, and a number that are being planned. We build for water usage in these dwellings. There's one water meter that serves the whole building, and we only bill one meter charge for an entire building, which may have several hundred residents within a single building. So, and I believe that the residents within the dwelling only pay a portion or a small portion of what a normal water meter charge would be for a dwelling. It was noted that the sewer charge is per dwelling unit. So, just following the discussion of the committee that we support the staff's recommendation to move forward with a dwelling charge per each unit for water usage. So, and that would more equalize the water usage amongst high density dwellings versus single dwelling that pays a meter charge. So. That adjourn the meeting at 1:16, and I'll introduce these minutes for approval.
We have a motion for approval. Do we have a second?
Second.
Discussion.
The only thing I'd like to add that I remember part of the conversation is while we supported it, I think there was a need for urgency for them to move on it, to let the people of these, the owners of these buildings know, with only 5 months really left. A lot of them are planning their, you know, rent increases. Some of them are planning on maybe building additional units. And for them to know that this is going to change sooner than later would be better.
Additional discussion.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed, is this something that new that we charge each apartment? You know, is this, for a specific fee for the water usage?
This would be new. Maybe General Manager Aaron could address a little more detail on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. Thank you, Commissioner Babu. What we have here is a one-unit charge, regardless how many apartments are in that building. And as an example, if we go back and look at the planning committee notes there, item number 4 on the planning committee notes, example of water services, the meter charge for a 24-unit building with a 3/4-inch meter and a $5.17 per month equals $17.84 in fixed costs for that unit, or a total of 96 cents per unit per month. So that's all them apartments are paying, is 96 cents on a 24-unit, whereas a residential dwelling is paying $14.37 for those same charges. Commodities, besides the amount of water they actually use, is over and above that, but just the fixed charge is equal to that. When we look at the city's wastewater, they charge differently. They charge per unit, so that charges per unit, so it's more equitable in relation to residential dwellings. So that's what we're looking at. How do we equalize that? As we see more and more apartments being constructed in the community, that becomes more important that we take a look at that charge structure that we have for multi-unit buildings.
Yeah, I understand that, but the reason I'm asking this question is because I know the building owners charge some fees, so how that would be compatible with our own fee, you know, because I know the building management, I remember quite some time ago, I used to live in one of those units, and I know that I used to pay the water, and they used to charge us the sewer and all that in a separate billing with the management. How that will be separate then?
Yeah. Commissioner, that's a very good point. I think that gets back to Commissioner Johnson's comment. The sooner that we make that decision to change, and the sooner we notify the owners of or the landlords of the apartments, the sooner they can notify their tenants that there will be an adjustment if they're passing those costs on.
But they're charging though. I mean, the building owners are already charging those tenants.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, I mean, will we also charge that the tenants too, or are we going to take that responsibility?
That would be up to each apartment building, depending on their lease structure with their tenants. If it's in their lease to pass those costs on, then I would say you're absolutely correct. So, you know, I'm not familiar with all the different leases that each apartment has or each landlord has with their tenants, but we're looking more at our charges to the landlord, because the landlord is actually who receives the bill. We do not bill for water, wastewater, every tenant. So, and that's, I think, gets back to your point. Some landlords pass some of those costs on.
Because I know, like, electricity, you know, we send billing, and the landlord, nothing has to do with it. But as the landlord is involved, I think they're overcharging sometimes. I won't say all of them,
sure,
but some landlords, how will we be fair in that? Because of, I know landlords are really kind of...
And that would be out of our control, Commissioner Mabu. bamboo, what the landlords are charging their tenants, we're not involved in. That would be up for the tenants to question their landlords if they feel they're being overcharged on any particular item.
Yeah. So how can we inform then the tenants to know? Because this becomes that most of the tenants don't really know, because the reason I'm asking this question is because I was in there and really they will never share with you that information. I didn't even know that you charge like 90 cents per unit. Yeah. You don't know, I was paying more, way more than that. Yeah. You know, so how would they know that they really kind of pay more than that? That's the question.
Well, two things. One, it's really not our responsibility to probably intervene between the landlord and tenant relationship. But the other piece of that is that the tenants have to know what's in their leases and address that with their landlord.
But is it a possibility that we charge directly to the units, the utility itself, rather than going through the landlord?
Oh, could we charge tenants? No. The reason that we can't charge the tenants for what? There's only one service that goes into those buildings, and the owners then, they tap that one service and one water meter, and then they send it to all their apartments. So buildings, the apartments, for the most part, and maybe there's one or two that have individual services. I don't know, Janelle, maybe you know that. Is there any apartments that have individual services?
Not in the multi-units that we are looking at.
Yeah,
but it would be built out like the sewer is being built out right now. So that apartment owner, if they have 24 units, they're billed for 24 sewer services, which is $28 times 24. On the water side right now, they're not being billed that, so they would be billed. We're looking at that meter charge, and so that would be times the 24, so it would be consistent.
And there's no way to separate that by apartment, because apartments weren't constructed with a separate water line per se from here the water comes into the building, you know, and then a dozen apartments here, there's just one water line that goes all the way across and they yeah. just tap in. So there's no way to separate that.
Okay. See that.
It would have to be constructed when they're built that way. Yeah. So
thank you. It's a challenge. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Weber.
Can you clarify the sewer charges being charged per unit and why the inbound freshwater is not?
Commissioner Weber, that's a very good question. It's the way it's always been done. I don't know the history. But it's been done that way as long as I've been here, and as more apartments are being built, kudos to our, you know, Janelle and our customer service staff. As we were looking at our programs, all our software and our billings, you know, you've heard us talk about all the different challenges that we've had with our billing and the things that are surfacing and we're trying to correct. This is another one of those items that surface as we're looking at our utility billing. We looked at it and said, these apartments are really getting a minimal charge compared to a residential home and in relation to what they're being charged for wastewater. So this is one of those challenges that surfaced here in the last, you know, 3-4 months here as we're trying to perfect our utility billing program.
So then can you explain the difference between a single residential bill and the apartment bill? The difference was what did you say, $14 or something like that? What is the difference there?
A residential home, per se, was a 5/8 meter, has a $3.58 per month meter charge, as noted on the bill, and a $10.79 fixed cost, as noted on the bill, which equates to $14.37. Now, when we go to an apartment building, a 24-inch unit apartment building has one water meter. It's a 3/4-inch water meter, and by our billing charge, that 3/4-inch water meter is charged out at $5.17 a month, and the monthly fixed charge for a 24-unit apartment based on meter size is $17.84. So when you break that down, amongst the 24 units that comes to 96 cents. Where on the wastewater side, they charge the fixed costs or meter costs to all apartments instead of just the one charge.
It's not fair. This is.
But each meter is charged off of volume.
Yes, they still get their volume charged. That rate is consistent on all different classifications. So in addition to the meter charge and fixed costs, there's also that volume charge or the water itself. And when I say it's all the same, there's a difference between residential and commercial rates and industrial rates, but it's all based on the number of cubic feet they consume.
So to clarify, at this point we're only talking fixed costs, obviously.
Right.
But we're going to sort that out.
To me, it seems like getting charged twice.
So I'm going to recommend that that you and Mr. Heron take this discussion offline. Fair enough?
If we vote for the minutes, how do I not support this recommendation?
Because this is only a discussion for staff to further look into this, so we're not approving anything.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Can I make a clarification? Does it have to come back for approval? It's just a billing. I don't think it has to come back for approval, does it?
Yes.
Or does?
As okay. The commission sets our rates, Commissioner Johnson, so
okay.
That'll be part of our rate, it'll be a change not to our rates, it'll be a change to our policy, and the commission sets our policy. So what our directive will be here, if it's approved here today, the Planning Commission's recommendation, as Commissioner Matter noted, you'll be directing staff to bring a revised policy back for consideration.
Got it. Thank you.
So,
okay. Is that okay, Nate?
As long as I'm just approving the minutes, yes, that's okay.
Yeah, and for your sake of clarification as to the course of the discussion, I would encourage further discussion with Mr. Heron.
Yep.
Any further discussion on the minutes? I do want to point out, just for the sake of public record, looking at the water treatment plant, we're looking at roughly a $4 million increase from the last price point that we had looked at there, and I think it's important that we understand a little bit more of why that is and where that's coming from. Of that $4 million, roughly $3.5 million of it is related to electrical equipment and electrical side of things, and I believe the majority of that is a combination of inflationary forces as well as just the construction and electrical industry as a whole is seeing dramatic price increases outside of traditional inflation. So that's where the majority of that $3.5 million increase is coming in, as far as I understand that. Mr. Hannah, is there anything on there that I misspoke or that you want to address further?
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. The only other thing is, on Friday I received notice from the state that they're moving our project forward. They refer to it as it's being entered into the book. But long and short of it really means that the project is continuing to move forward, that they are still considering funding a proportion of our project. So I was pleased to see that. So
thank you. Commissioner Robert.
Yeah, quick question with regards on the water treatment plant. I know that completed 90%. I was actually trying to look the backwards, looking at the strategic plan. Where does the strategic plan fits in this? Because I was looking the final one and I could not find it. I went to the miscellaneous data and was unable to see that.
Commissioner Mabu, no, excellent question. If I can yield that to Kevin. Kevin, do you know where that is in our plan, or doing what I'm doing, opening up our plan right now? Okay. You give us just a second here. Water treatment is strategic initiative number 8. Let's see what we have there.
It's under number 5 infrastructure.
Is that going through the miscellaneous data? Is that where the documents
are? Yeah, it's a strategic plan you'll find under miscellaneous data. It's...
But this...
Is it on the agenda itself?
On the bottom.
Yeah, on the bottom of the agenda.
Yeah.
And on your iPad.
Okay.
Of today's meeting,
with
the 2021 WME strategic plan.
She includes everything.
20 over 20.
You mean, if you haven't updated your iPad, update, hit that little circle so your iPad updates.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. It's updated. Okay.
Pass that down to him.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, I see it. Oh, okay. I was looking. I couldn't find it. Sorry.
You're
okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Struggling with this. Thanks. Yeah. Sorry about that.
All right. Any further discussion? If not, we do have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as presented with the information that we've also provided. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for the discussion on that. Next on the agenda, we have our monthly financial reports. I'll turn that over to Ms. Precker.
Thank you, Commissioner. The first financial report here for May is the electric division. And as we look at residential and commercial industrial revenues, they are up approximately $327,000 from last year. Expenses are also up $68,000. And retained earnings are up about $427,000 from last year. Water division for May, after we factor in that 20% rate increase for this year, residential and commercial industrial revenues are down about $13,500 from where we would expect them to be. Expenses are up about $80,000, leaving the retained earnings up about $153,000 from last year. And when we look at them combined, overall the retained earnings are up about $580,000 from the prior year. And then on the last page, you'll see the graphs comparing the months and the year to date to last year.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Weber.
When did the actual rate increase for water take place?
January 1st.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on the financials? Okay. Any highlights on the investment portfolio?
For May, the month-end value is $38,408,000. And one note added, we did open an LTD fund in the 4M account at $5 million, which was $3 million transferred from checking and $2 million transferred from the 4MP fund.
Thank you for those details. That's helpful to track what we're doing and where everything is going. Any questions on the investments? All right, thank you, Andrea. Next up, we have a wind turbine report. Mr. Marty.
Thank you, Chair Manner. As you see, the June 21 wind turbine report, starting out with availability, and I'll try and answer the question up front. Number three was at 78.8%, number four at 76.6. So what happened there is we learned something new. When the turbines fault out for any reason, they typically go into a brake mode. A brake mode 50 is like a general, just a glitch. It's unwinding or overspeed or something that basically corrects itself. It'll go into a brake mode 50, it'll think about it, it resets itself and starts back up again. Anything brake mode 51 and above, those have to be manually reset by staff. So what happened the first week in June, I believe it was, I spoke with Nick about that this morning. They had a brake problem in the generator circuit of the wind turbines, and it went into brake mode 50. The guys took a look at it, it'll reset itself. That week, we didn't have any wind to speak of. Each day, they check their wind turbine report or log in and look at it every morning. Everything looked fine. The turbines were following the wind as minuscule as it was. The blades were pitched. So they are, we thought, ready to go. It didn't happen until the end of that week, I believe Friday, when Nick was driving into work. It was a little windier that morning, and he noticed both wind turbines were still standing still. He logged in, and it still showed that code in there with the brake mode 50. So they had to manually reset that one. So we missed out on availability, didn't really miss out on a lot of wind because it wasn't very windy that week. It was hot and stale. So that's the cause of driving our availability numbers down for June. If you look at the next page, so the total kilowatt hours output is 269,811. If you look at June historically, that's not a great number, but if you take a look a month ahead in July, it's kind of an average number for July. And if you recall, it seems like Mother Nature has flipped our months on us this year. We had our July weather in June, the real hot, dry, typically don't see a lot of wind with that kind of weather, and that's what we experienced in June. So we're hoping that she gives us July, you know, June weather in July, and we'll recoup a little bit. So hopefully that answers questions that you have.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yeah, so you said the mode 50 was an automatic reset, but you had to manually reset it.
Yes, we ended up having to manually reset this one. It had to do with the generator circuit, and I can't remember if that was caused by a, I know we had a couple of spikes on the system, power supply spikes. I can't remember the dates on those, Jaron, do you recall?
Yeah, there's like, when that circuit recloses, 30 feet up by the Midwest campus, that area, there were a couple squirrels on that line, and it recloses it.
So when that happens, it actually affects both turbines. So it's kind of rare that both turbines fault out unless it's a grid problem. And when you have a reclose on that circuit, like Jaron mentioned, it'll affect both turbines, and that's what happened here. It just kind of got caught in that. So we now know that if we have problems, any kind of issue, and it's a generator fault, the guys are going to watch that a little closer to make sure it clears the boat. Correct. Typically, a brake mode 50 resets itself.
You good?
I have a question.
Commissioner Johnson.
And I don't know what the protocol is when we lost electricity. I got one to my work email and another differently. I was reached out to by county commissioners wanting me to tell them what was happening. I mean, I'm the last person you need to probably notify, other than is there some system that we know of? One wanted me to call a cell phone. I'm like, well, I don't know any more than you do. But does anybody else get commented or contacted? No?
I do, because I'm a major user at my work.
Okay. Commissioner Johnson, Jenny O, there's an outage on there. Yeah, staff is in contact with Jenny O. What happens? Is it going to be on? So they can plan accordingly. That probably was the same outage that I received an email from one of the commissioners, county commissioners, and our staff was already out. They're already paged when I received that text message. The outage was reported through CRC or Lyman or already.
Because it's all automated when we're out, isn't it? I mean, you get notified. Someone doesn't have to call you, do they? Like a user, an end user?
Typically not. An end user could certainly call, and they would get the dispatch center if it's after hours.
But normally we're not notified as commissioners. Okay.
Well, you're notified as a commissioner if it's going to be an extended, you know, storm type related or extended outage. But our outages, our reliability factors are extremely high, and our response time is very short, and outage time is very short. Most of our outages, you know, I'd like to say 15 minutes or less, but it's probably half hour. I moved here. You know, most of our outages are off the top of your head, you know, probably less than a half hour.
I think customers averaged 2 minutes outage time last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I mean, our outage is stellar.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have extended commissioner, they're sent an email, but that's very rare.
Commissioner DeBlake.
Going back to the wind turbine, when you said a manual reset, what does that involve? Is that somebody having to climb the turbine tower?
Not usually. A lot of times it can be done right on their laptop remotely.
It's a software reset.
Yep.
Doesn't somebody have to go out there to push a button?
Correct. There are certain types of alarms where they'll have to reset at the tower where they can't do it remotely, and that, you know, there's a scale of alarms,
mm-hmm.
depending on what they are, that dictate that, whether the turbine resets itself, whether we have to manually reset it with the laptop, or you got to go out there.
Okay. Any further questions?
I just have one more follow-up. I guess I'm concerned with the assumption that this was going to be reset automatically, and it wasn't. I'm glad you mm-hmm. caught it, but it significantly affected our availability, and what is the measure so that doesn't happen again?
We're going to basically watch each one moving forward and make sure that it's actually resetting itself. We get an alarm or an email each time we get any type of alarm, where in the past we assume that they're resetting themselves. You look at it, oh, it's in a break mode 50. We forget about it. Now the guys will actually check it daily. Rather than just visually, that week there wasn't any wind. They saw that the wind, if you know the wind turbines well enough, you can tell what the visually by looking at them, what the blades are pitched at and it's following the wind, you know that it's in a certain state that it's ready for wind. And it looked like that all week long. So I guess we took it for granted that it was okay. And it's not happened to us before, so.
Right. And I guess I'm still not hearing anything other than we'll just look at it.
Right. Each time we'll get an alarm, they'll log in and make sure that the reset has completed. If it hasn't, they'll have to manually reset it.
Okay.
These turbines continue to be kind of a pain in our rear side. Over the number of years, for being such a small part of our power portfolio, they sure are a big-time consumer. Kevin, just for historical purposes, could I have you maybe update this report then with just a brief note in there about
sure
what
can.
Took place? Just,
yep.
Just so we have something to reference again. Okay, any final questions? Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have a transmission investment update. Mr. Hamm, Mr. Smith, I guess is going to take this one, but Mr. Hamm, is there anything further that you wanted to add historically, or is Mr. Smith going to address PRAM?
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Matter. I was Commissioner Matter that referring to, you asked if we could do a little more background on our transmission investment, so I spoke with Jared before we came in the meeting here, so you can cover that, so thank you, Commissioner Matter. I'll yield that question to Jared.
It's all you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Commissioner Madden. So transmission investment update, we typically do this once a year. Normally it's pretty short, but since we have so much going on and we've got some new faces on the board, I'm going to go a little bit into the background or history here. So in a given year, depending on how hot it is and how much load we have approximately $3.5 million in transmission expenses, and we get about $2 million in transmission revenue. So there's an opportunity for, you know, approximately $3.5 million expenses with no revenue, or we can increase our revenue and try to offset that. And that's kind of the goal in our transmission investments, is to neutralize that as much as possible. So the formula to increase your revenue is complex, and I'll try to oversimplify it here, but there is a zone which is generally Minnesota, and anybody that uses energy in that zone is charged transmission for that energy, and that's where our expenses come from. That's pretty straightforward. The revenues come from the amount of money collected in that zone is divvied out by the transmission owners in the zone, and it's based on gross book value and some other things. So the newer and more transmission facilities you have, the more money you get back from that total amount collected. Back in 2014 or so, so one idea would be, let's just everybody throw money into transmission facilities whether they're needed or not. In order to prevent that, MISO has to approve any transmission projects in their area. And so there's a process to get transmission facility projects approved. Back in 2010, I think it was, is when they started talking about this new Priam substation, and it eventually got approved in 2012, 2013, which is when we started pursuing, okay, who's actually going to own it, construct it, that type of thing. You'll recall, Priam is outside of our service territory, so you may wonder, why is Wilmer building a substation outside of our service territory? GRE actually approached us and said, we have the rights to build this Priam substation, but we want to see if you're interested in building it, and then we'll buy you out of your ownership at the Wilmer sub. We have 230 kV transmission equipment and 69 kV transmission equipment at the Wilmer sub. So they said, we'll let you build Priam, and we want to buy you out of Wilmer. We thought, well, that's an interesting idea. We hired MCR to actually look at the analysis, because like I said, it's more complex than what I just relayed to you. That's pretty general. So they did a lot of projections, and they understand that industry very well, and determined that WMU is actually underinvested, and that we should not only construct and own Priam, but we should retain all of our ownership in Wilmer. And so we were able to convince them of the numbers, and they agreed to it. And then MCR also projected more into the future and saw that in approximately 10 years, transmission rates are going to keep going up and your book value is going to keep going down. You're going to need another $10 million investment to try to neutralize your expenses and revenues. So moving forward, we are familiar with this kind of Benson area project, which has the transmission planners got a project approved to expand Wilmer and Priam again. And that's what we're in the process of right now, where we are, because that transmission project's approved, it's in our area, we have kind of the first rights to it. We have an $8.3 million project at Wilmer, and GRE is doing $2.6 million. So it influences how we split up the ownership, is this kind of revenue neutrality, transmission cost and expenses, but also just who's going to benefit from it is another factor in how you split up the ownership. So did I answer kind of the background question you were looking for, Commissioner?
You did, and thank you.
Okay. Next, I'm going to kind of move into just the Priam or the transmission projects we have. So is there any more questions while we're on the topic of the history or background and that before we move on?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Jared. If I could interject one before you come on. Also, our return on our transmission investments is set at between 10 and 11%. So there's a significant rate of return on transmission investments. So when Jared was talking about the dollars that we're investing in there, the PUC actually, through policy, has identified that as being the proper rate of return to entice people to invest in the needed transmission. So.
Thank you. Okay, so then moving on to the next slide there, the Wilmer substation, like I said, it's an $8.3 million project. The scope there is to expand our 230 kV facilities and then replace some aged 69 kV facilities. GRE at the same time is going to expand their 115 kV equipment and replace the control building. GRE has been hired to engineer and construct our facilities since they're out there, and they have just buying power in that area. The transformers already been purchased, and a lot of the large equipment has already been purchased. Construction's going to begin soon. There's talk of moving the drain tile real soon, but the actual site grading for the substation is going to begin in August, and our target in-service date is spring of 2022. Over at the Priam sub on the next slide, the scope there is to expand the 115 kV facilities. So today, it comes from the Benson-Maynard area and it stops at Priam, the 115 transmission line. This expansion project will allow it to pass through Priam and continue all the way to the Wilmer sub. DGR is engineering that project. Right now, the construction is out for bid. We're actually opening it tomorrow. Most of the large equipment has been purchased. There'll still be another control panel purchase that will come in front of you shortly. The construction there is scheduled to begin in October, and then our target in-service date is March of 2022. Other upcoming projects on the next slide, we've got a cell substation project, which is quite a ways underway. It's to retire some old aged oil circuit breakers and update the protection and controls there. Like I said, the engineering and large equipment is complete. Construction is going to begin this August, next month, and then we're hoping to have that in service in October. And then we've got another large power plant substation project. We have to get all of our equipment out of the power plant building. We're going to build a formal or exclusive substation for that equipment. And the engineering and design is underway. We've got the site layout finalized. We've got the transformer ordered, but we still got quite a ways to go on that. Coming up in the next 5 to 10 years, the Wilmer Sub 230 to 69 kV transformer is getting old and will need to be replaced or repaired shortly. Some of the transmission planning ideas are just to add a second transformer at Priam instead of replacing that, but we'll still work out the details there. There's potential for a new substation in the southeast part of Wilmer. If you kind of think behind Walmart, between Walmart and Home Depot, there's a lot of open space there. If that were to get developed, it would be beneficial to have a substation in that area. We've also expanded south of Highway 23, that Abbott Drive area where the new Ziegler building was constructed. So our load is growing to the south. If that continues, we would look at a new substation, but we're not there yet. And then 230 kV transmission line, we own 13 miles of 230 kV transmission line. We replaced 13 structures about 5 years ago, and I expect in the next 5 to 10 years we'll have another 10 to 20 structures we'll need to rebuild. GRE has plans to expand the 115 transmission lines at Wilmer. Like I said, we'll have one after this current expansion is done, but they're in the plans to do approximately two more. We wouldn't really have any involvement of those as they are today, and that's what I know about. Any questions?
Any questions?
Commissioner Lavoie. Yes, I understand the complexity of transmissions and, you know, and to being ahead of the game and, you know, opportunity to offset the cost. But one thing that I, you know, that Mr. Hearn mentioned is just like maybe we're getting back, what, 10% or something like that for revenue-wise. It would be really great also if we know how much the average customers will benefit this, you know, impact in terms of saving or the future would make more sense, you know, to me or to the community. You know, something like that, just indicating what would be the impact, you know, the our clients who's using this services, you know, or projecting future saving or things in that nature would be very helpful.
Thanks, Commissioner Mabou. We'll talk with John about that and we'll see if we can't put something together.
Thanks. To that point, and I know one of the points of discussion we've had before is the fact that we've been able to increase our revenue has certainly impacted our ability to keep rates as low as we have. So we know that has had a, how we measure the exact impact, I don't know, but we know it has had a positive impact in that regard. Furthermore, I think, John, again, thank you for this update. I think the Priam substation has been a very positive asset for us, a good project for us. I think that the enhancements over there and the other expansion projects that we're doing elsewhere, not only does it increase our transmission investment and revenue, but it has improved our reliability and our redundancy for power in the community. So I see these as great projects and great assets. So again,
yep, it's a win-win. We get for sure financial benefit and also reliability.
For sure. Any further questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have our Missouri River Board meeting recap for June. Mr. Heron.
Mr. Matter, unless there's questions on the written summary, I'll turn over the mic to put the video on.
Might be a loser. Welcome to our board report from the June board meeting of the Missouri River Energy Services Western Minnesota Municipal Power Agency Boards of Directors. This is Member Services Representative Joel Peck. The board met in person at the Missouri River Office in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is now open to the public. For some board members, it was their first visit to the office, while for others, it was their first opportunity to the office since it was moved out of last year. In addition, board members were introduced to new staff members and interns who have joined us the river since March of 2020. The first item of business on the board's agenda was approving a five-year extension of the distribution maintenance agreement for the associate member of the Lake Minnesota for full services through February 2027. Currently, Missouri River provides full distribution maintenance services to seven communities and provides as-needed services to 10 other communities. Next, the board approved a transmission service agreement with Alamo Power Cooperative in Northwest Iowa. Alamo joined Southwest Power Group, or SPP, in September by moving some of its transmission facilities to the control of SPP. Under the agreement with Missouri River, Alamo will provide transmission service to Lake Park in Rock Rapids, Iowa, and Missouri, Minnesota, over the facilities not under SPP control. Alamo will bill Missouri River for the cost of the service, which Missouri River will then charge these members under the S1 agreement. The agreement establishes a new method for calculating amount of losses that would be due to Alamo, which will lead to significant savings for all three members. The boards received a report on the draft integrated resource plan, or IRP, that staff developed for the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. The IRP outlines Missouri River's generation and conservation activities over the next 15 years. Staff also updated the board on Missouri River's business continuity framework, fund development, and implementation timeline. Phase 2 of the plan will focus on disaster recovery options. As part of the meeting, the boards participated in their annual ethics training and certified compliance with Missouri River's conduct and code of ethics policy. The boards also approved a new policy adopting the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's standards of conduct. In other business, the boards authorized additional funding to replace the turbine and perform necessary maintenance for another turbine generator at the Marshall Wind Farm. It will be the third generator replaced at the wind farm within the last year. Last, the Missouri River Board accepted the resignation of Leon Schockenmeyer of Pierce, South Dakota, and adopted a resolution of accommodation and appreciation for his 13 years of service on the board. The board appointed Brad Palmer, Utilities Director of Pierce Municipal Utilities, to replace Schockenmeyer on the Missouri River Board. Palmer's duties as board member took effect July 1. That wraps up the report from the June meeting. Thank you for watching, and please join us next month for a recap of the board's annual July strategic planning session.
Mr. Hearn, anything further to point out?
No, Commissioner Matter.
Okay. No questions? We're good there. Thank you. Mr. Riddell. You are up. You've got an update for us on the Rumorfest Block Party drawing winners.
That's right. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Very quickly, I just wanted to let you know that in lieu of our regular open house, we participated in Rumorfest. We talked a little bit about this at the last commission meeting. Staff thought it was a great success. We communicated with potentially a different demographic of customers that we may not have been able to communicate with, especially young children, if you were there to see that, which was a lot of fun. Anyway, what I just wanted to show you all is that we had prizes for a drawing that we had. We had about 150 to 200 people sign up for the drawing, which was very good. I checked to make sure all the winners were WMU customers, which they all were, and I've contacted all of them as well. And we're going to do just a little picture with Mary Bach, who won the grand prize electric lawnmower. So unless you have any questions, that's kind of it for that.
I'll just say again what a good job you did. And to watch you in action down there was really fun.
Well, I thought
I think you've missed your calling.
should open like a romper room or something.
Think about that. Anything else?
Other questions? All right, thank you, Chris.
All right, thank you very much.
Time in that. All right, Mr. Hoon, General Manager's report.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. The first item is the employee luncheon. That is this week, Thursday, July 15th at 12 noon. Beth has posted this as a special council meeting, so all commissioners are welcome. I would encourage you to attend. Staff likes to see everyone there. Council Representative O'Brien, you're welcome to come as well. Appreciate it. And
where's the service center?
Yes.
Yeah.
What side around? Yeah, go this side. It's just
down that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, it's right on the corner right by the railroad tracks on 10th.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
And you can see the listing, the new employees, commissioners will be recognizing everyone on that list there at that meeting as well, or gathering as well. Other than that, we got Labor Committee meeting, a couple of items there. We need to pick that back up. And then our Planning Committee, as we talked about, is our policy change, which we don't have noted on here yet, but that'll be added here on the next agenda that goes out. The note that that'll be forthcoming. That would conclude unless there is additional questions by the commissioners.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Any other business to come before the commission today? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion to adjourn. We are now adjourned. Thank you.